Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 1st, 2016. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Chris Cosenza.
You are Chris Cosenza.
Fool's Day! That's about as high as I go on the April Fool's, you know.
Yeah, because you don't celebrate April Fools. It's irrational.
I don't celebrate anything, right? Exactly. But you did journalism in college, correct?
Of course.
So did you ever do did your I don't know if you were on the student newspaper or whatever you were. But
I was.
Did they ever do the April Fools edition?
They did 1 year the April Fools edition. Then the next year they got so much guff over it. They did like an April Fools page
that was my
or something.
Point, right.
Yeah.
I've never seen a newspaper, particularly student newspaper, I don't think real newspapers do it, a newspaper, a radio show. I've never seen any of these kind of April Fool's-y things for media ever work out for people doing it.
Right.
Because you've got people that don't get it, or you have people that get it and just think it's childish and stupid or not funny.
Yeah.
So, it's a problem.
We actually did a commentary page with our op-ed guys once where it was completely like we had like a guy who was a wicked conservative promoting all left, you know, and then everyone was like, what's going on? And then we made fun of people and stuff. And then we did it. It was like spring break. So they didn't have a chance to like rebut or whatever. And I got all kinds of crap from all these like leaders in the community and everything.
It's just dangerous.
Yeah, it's just not worth it. So my senior year when I was editor of the whole paper, I said, we're not doing one this year. And everyone understood, but yeah.
And particularly in this era of the internet, right? You know, back in the old days, you could maybe do a spoof on a radio show and only the people that heard it would be upset.
Right.
Now it's out there, right?
Yeah.
And we did a spoof any a podcast, somebody is going to find it 12 years from now and think that was a real show, right?
That's right. Oh, that'd be hilarious.
Wouldn't it?
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, for them.
Yeah,
well, probably,
right.
But anyhow, that's why we don't do April Fools. But, but no fooling. I am literally in Iceland right now when you're listening to this. I mean, I'm not right now.
I know. When you dropped that on me, like the day before.
I didn't drop it on you.
He's like, I'm leaving tomorrow for Iceland, so we got to do two shows. And I'm like, you're leaving for what? You're like, Iceland. I'm like, what do you mean Iceland? You mean like Iceland, the country? And you're like, yeah. I'm like, what are you talking about? I can't believe you just go to Iceland for a few days.
Well, you know, I'm a travel expert, right? So I can ferret out the good deals and things. And I'm already going to be up in the Boston area for our great Ante-Up Poker Tour event that's coming up literally this week, April 2nd through the 10th. Or, I'm sorry, yeah.
April 2nd
through the 10th.
Yeah.
At Mohegan Sun. And all the details on that can be found at anteupmagazine.com/Mohegan Sun. So if you're going to be there, please stop by and say hi, because I will be there the entire time. But since I was already going to be up there for that, I found a really good flight and travel deal from Boston to Iceland, only a 5-hour flight. And it's always been a country that I've been really intrigued by. So Laura and I are literally here in Iceland now, but not now.
So you're flying to Boston, but not for the Ante-Up Poker Tour. But
well, I would have flown to Boston for the Ante-Up Poker Tour.
All right.
I was flying up a couple nights early, so
right.
Fly from there to Iceland.
So you're flying to Boston.
So being an efficient traveler,
right? You do realize that you probably flew into the wrong airport for the Ante-Up Poker Tour stuff, but
well, no, I actually looked at Providence and Hartford and all that.
And it was just cheaper to go to Boston.
Well, I mean, yes, actually, it was cheaper to go to Boston, and we had to go to Boston anyhow because that's the airport to fly to Iceland.
Yeah, I know that. That's what I'm saying.
So
you're sort of manipulating this whole. I'm going to be up there anyway.
My home from Providence and I would have flown home from Providence or Hartford, but it was actually cheaper to fly home from Boston.
Very good.
Saving the company money. Having to drive an extra hour. Those are the kind of sacrifices I make for any of them. But anyhow, I'd love to see you. We've got a lot of listeners that have emailed me saying that they're going to be at Mohegan Sun. That's really great. So I do hope you all show up and look for me in the tournament area throughout the week. So stop and say hi.
Absolutely.
All right, so since we're recording early and there wasn't a lot of news out there, we thought we'd have a little fun today, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the World Series of Poker kicks off next month. And it was like hypotheticals. You know, we're in the political season now, right? So you see these debates, you know, if this and that, and then the candidates always say, I don't answer hypotheticals. But we answer hypotheticals.
That's right, that's what we do.
Exactly, because we're better than the average candidate.
That's right.
So, you know, I was asking you, hey, maybe we have some fun with here. Let's do something where we say, if you could play any three events at the Rio this summer, and of course not counting the main event, because that would be a no-brainer, I think, right?
Right.
Which three would they be, and why? And, I think this is kind of interesting, because, you know, each of us have only played one event ever, right?
Right.
A while back, so we're not like regular World Series players. And I would say probably most of our listeners probably aren't either, right?
Right.
Probably, if they are, they probably go out for the Colossus or the Millionaire Maker or something like that, or and might try to satellite in the main event or something like that, but, or the seniors event if they're of that, or the ladies event if they qualify for that, right?
Right.
But generally, I don't think we have a lot of listeners that are going out there and renting a house in Summerlin for the summer.
Right.
Grinding the World Series poker, right?
Right.
So, in this hypothetical, we have a rich backer, right?
Right.
And he says, you know, I like you, Scott. I like you, Chris. I'm going to put you in three events. I don't care what they are. Go for it. That's the hypothetical.
Sounds like fun.
All right. So how do we want to do this? We want to do
one each as we go. We pick three of them, but we're going to do one, then me, then you. So we'll go back and forth.
Okay. You want me to start or you want to
start? Yeah, you start.
All right. So the first one I had listed is the $1,500 buy-in Raz event.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to go through this with all of them, I think. But I attack this problem like I do all problems, very logically, right?
Okay.
So I have a couple things I'm trying to accomplish here. One, I think there's a case to be said for entering the biggest buy-ins. You know, if I get a sugar daddy, right?
Right.
Why not just play for the biggest money, right?
Right.
And that might or might not come into play in my other choices. But I would think my ultimate goal in the World Series, whether the sugar daddy actually becomes real or I had to actually put myself into another event at some point, is to win a bracelet, right?
Right.
So I am thinking that I could just lock down for a couple months and live, eat, and breathe Raz and be fairly, competitive.
The question is, why would you?
Well, here's my point is I think, and no disrespect to the Raz players out there, but I think it's the game that you could master more quickly than any other.
I know, and that's our main thing when we were still doing the show at the time.
Right. Yeah, let's. But it wasn't because it was easier though, and easier is the wrong word. I hate to say that, but I think it's the easiest game to lock down.
Yeah,
you know, it's not, you don't have high low kind of things that you have to worry about. You know, it's a fixed limit game, so you don't have to worry about how much to bet, right?
Which makes
it complicated. You get a lot of board lock information based on players have around, right? So you know where you are, and you know if you have no chance of winning, so you can get out pretty easily.
Right.
Obviously, it's a game that lives in the edges, right? So the really good Raz players can destroy you because they know the edges. But I think you can close down everything down to those edges and be fairly confident or competitive in Raz. So I think this is probably my best path at getting a bracelet.
Are we...
And I chose the 1500 because the players are much more difficult than 10,000.
Let me ask you, are we sort of interjecting our opinions on these picks, or are we just saying, this is why you did and move on to mine?
No, I want to hear you destroy my picks.
Well, it's not that I want to destroy it, but I'm just thinking... here's the deal. When you and I entered like the horse circuit event, I thought that we had a distinct advantage over every game that wasn't Hold'em. over 90% of that field.
Yes.
And that's why I loved Raz for that. And I loved Stud 8 for that. And I loved Stud for that. And even Omaha to a point. So
first time I think you've ever said you like
Omaha. Yeah, I know. So, but, and that's why we went so far. And I think that when you put up $1,500 and the only thing you're playing is Raz, I don't think your edge is there anymore. I think the guys doing that, you're going to get one or two guys who are like, oh, it's Raz? I thought it was Stud. Because they'll probably name it, you know,
Raz.
Yeah, or yeah. So I really don't think there's going to be too much of an edge for you. I think the guys putting up $1,500 to play a game where they have to make the worst hand are still the best players in the world who know how to play Stud better than you could play Raz ever. And I don't think you got an edge there. Hmm. I mean, I applaud why you did it and all that other stuff you brought up, but I just think you don't really have the edge you think you have in that.
You would think I would
game.
Have a better edge at a 1,500 horse.
Yes, I do. Because then you've got guys who are just good at No Limit and good at Omaha because they play in their local casino and thinking, well, how hard can it be? I know how to play Stud. I'll make it through the other three games.
Gotcha.
But in Raz, you don't enter Raz unless you know how to play Raz already, especially for $1,500, unless you're...
That's a very good point.
Right, I mean, unless you're
this turned out
silly.
To be more interesting than I thought it would be.
That's cool.
We're just trying to fill space on the show.
Right? Yeah, and I don't always want to be the contrarian to Scott Long. I'm
yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Well, a little bit, but in this
that's
case,
where people pay to listen.
In this case, I thought Raz, you're specifically entering this event, spending $1,500 to do it. You're going to know how to play this game.
I'm not
game.
Spending $1,500. Sugar Daddy is.
No, but I mean the people who are, not you, the people who are entering. Right. They don't have sugar daddies like we do in this hypothetical. So. I think that, yeah. And
but
then
I would argue you're also going to get more people that aren't really good at Raz entering the 1,500 Raz versus the 10,000.
Well, that's true if they want to learn the game, but I mean, who really wants to spend 50? When you get, if you want to win a bracelet, you're not going to win it in Raz.
Everybody, I think a lot of people that, I don't think, other than the fact that the person that accidentally registers has no idea what he's doing, right?
Right.
Other than that, I think if you're registering in that, you've played Raz at some point and you think you know it, and then you're probably those players are the type that have a fairly decent bankroll and they're like, hey, $1,500 for a shot at a bracelet.
Yeah.
Or not respecting the edges in Raz, right? And just thinking, as I kind of laying it out, that it's probably perceived to be the easiest game to play.
Yeah.
Kind of figure they can just.
Yeah, that's the thing is you're like, there will be some people who are looking for player of the year points or desperate to get a bracelet, but Raz is so early in the schedule that I don't think that that's going to be a pressing factor for them. It's usually the end when they're entering all these, as many no limit events as they can to get their points.
It's funny because the three I listed are on like the first 13 events.
So yeah, that's what I'm saying. So
I'll be home and back here in Florida before July hits.
And most of mine are like late June, July, so I've done that, but. All right, so we'll move on to mine, I guess?
Yep, sure.
All right, my first one is the 10K Stud 8.
Oh, big money.
Well, here's the deal, okay? I did what you sort of alluded to in your little description of this was, if it's a hypothetical and I've got a guy with unlimited funds, I think if I'm going to cash in these events, you know, I don't think... If I played the $1,500 Stud 8, if there was one, I can't remember. But if I played that versus the 10K Stud 8, I know there's going to be better players out there, but I still think that if I'm going to survive long enough to cash, I might as well try to make as much money as possible when I do. Because
true.
And I don't think it's going to offset, like, okay, I'll be playing worse players in the $1,500 event, so I might go further and make more money. There's no way I'm going to make more than what I would cash minimum probably in Stud 8 10K than I would in minimum or even a little bit further in Stud 8 1,500. So
yes, there's a very strong financial argument for your line
yeah.
of thinking.
So, and then the other thing, too, is that I was very cognizant of the fact that I wanted to pick three specific events. One that would make me very happy because I love that game the most, and I get to play against the best Stud 8 players in the world and just see exactly where I measure up, which would be terrible. I'd be the worst. But still, I'm playing against the best Stud 8 players. You know that
so,
Fossil Man's playing.
That's a good point, that you're playing against, there's an opportunity to play against the best in the world.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said for that, especially when it's on our 10,000 that we're blowing.
Yeah, exactly. You know it's going to be Fossilman. You know it's going to be Negreanu. You know you're going to face Ted Forrest. You're going to play all these awesome guys that you've just basically worshipped on TV for years and on our show. We've had them on our show, and I would love to just sit there and watch their minds work and then learn from it and see where I measure up and then maybe even make some decent money. So, yeah, my first one is a game that I love, but I want to do it for the most money possible so I can see how much I can win if I do win.
I wish I could criticize you, but I can't.
All right, cool.
In fact, actually, I would have criticized you if that was not on your list.
cool.
It's kind of funny. I don't know if you did this. I didn't spend a lot of time doing it, but as I was going through it, I'm like, yeah, that might make it on Chris's list.
Yeah, I was hoping we would avoid each other. I thought for sure one of them was going to cross over, but it didn't. But it kind of did in our choices.
But I think we're going to talk about it, too.
Yeah, so.
It was one of yours was on my short list.
So. Yeah.
All right, my second one is the $1,500 Dealer's Choice six-handed.
Ooh.
All right, so I realize I am not getting terrific EV out of my choices here.
Right.
Like two $1,500 events already. But this choice is just for fun. I mean, there's lots of reasons you go to the World Series, right? You want to win money, right? You want to win a bracelet, right?
Right.
But I think we also want to have fun. Right? I
mean, absolutely.
It's the
free.
Biggest poker festival in the world. It's just a massively interesting thing to walk into this room and see thousands and thousands of tables and every poker player in the world sitting there playing. And it's just a fun environment, right?
Right.
So if I'm playing, and that's the number one reason I play poker is to have fun, I think this would be a fun event. So it's six-handed, which I kind of like. I enjoy six-handed more than I do full ring. Obviously, it's dealer's choice, so a lot of these games can't be more than six-handed. But there's like 12 or 15 games you can choose from here. Now, admittedly, some I've never played.
Okay.
Some I've only played very little. So I'm going into this knowing I'm probably going to get my butt handed to me pretty
right.
easily.
Right.
But I'm going to have fun with it. You know, it's kind of, to me, this is the World Series equivalent of that Imperial Palace game that we played years ago.
Right? Yes.
We went there and we're like, we don't know what Ocean Pineapple is. But it's just kind of fun to, like, not worry about No Limit Hold'em or even Stud 8 and then just play these crazy games and see whether we can figure them out, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of, this is my fun event where I'm just going to sit down and have a blast, have a couple beers and pick some crazy game when it's my turn to pick and see how well I do.
See, that leads right into my second choice. And I don't disagree with that at all. Like you said, if we got somebody putting us in and it's like money's no object and we just like you guys and, you know, or some angel investor and you're fun, here's $1,500 to go play Dealer's Choice. That was one of the ones that I really considered.
All right.
And then I thought, well, I'm going to get most of those games in the 50K Players Championship. So
true, right?
let's enter the 50K and have a chance at winning a real lot of money. And again, do it against the best players in the world. And it feels more like our home game, both of those entries to me. Right. One of them is played in a particular order. The other one is whatever they choose. But it's very similar to our home game, which is what I enjoy. I would love to be able to play with our home game guys in the Brasilia room, you know, or something. That'd be kind of fun. So I'm thinking Players' Championship is similar to Dealer's Choice, except that it's you're told what game it is as you're going through, but you're going through very similar games. But it's a chance to win a lot
like
of money by cash. Yeah, it's like eight games.
Have all the games that would be in mind, but enough.
Right, it has a lot of games.
Yeah. And I used to love the eight-game mix of Poker Stars back when we used to play.
Yep, me too. Yep, used to love that.
That was actually my favorite sit-and-go. I probably didn't have great EV on it, but I did all right. But it was a lot of fun just to play, like, Deuce to Seven and, you know, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, when we first started playing poker online, it was always No Limit Hold'em. No Limit Hold'em. No Limit. And all of a sudden, now you're playing, like, Badoogie and stuff. It's like, wow, the computer can do this, and then you're enjoying it and stuff. I love that online. But to get back to this, I just thought, you know, again, why not spend the most money possible? Mm-hmm. Because if I just somehow squeak out a cash, you know, but it also is, I want to see what I would play like knowing that the entry was 50K and I mean, I'm playing
these
for...
These are by far the best players in the world.
In the world.
In one tournament, right?
Yep, absolutely.
You get in the main event, obviously you've got a bunch of idiots that are taking a shot of glory. There is not a lot of idiots taking a shot of glory in a 50K buy-in.
No, absolutely. So you know that, right away...
There's eight games that, and they know that they're playing against people whose worst game of those eight is probably better than their best game.
Yep, right? Yep. And you know that I don't have to even worry about the whole Mike McDermott slogan at the beginning of Rounders or when you sit at the table and you don't know who the... Yeah, I know I'm the idiot at that table.
I've got an edge over them. I know I'm already the idiot.
So I'll be looking to play big pots with everyone and see how long it lasts.
All right, so interestingly, this is going to go on forever, so I don't want to spend too much time. But so your strategy in that, would it be to... Because you said big pots.
Yeah.
Are you pressing your luck in the no limit and pot limit versions of this?
Yes. Absolutely.
Pretty
because
cool to test there.
These guys do not... like. And you know, the other thing, too, is I do have some sort of edge in the sense that whenever you see these guys get interviewed on TV and they're playing with some ass pickle, thank you very much, they always say, I don't know what he's going to do because he doesn't know what he's doing. And so it's hard for me to play against this type of play, bro. And they always say that in the interviews. So I know that I'll have some sort of edge in that. It's not that I don't really know what I'm doing, but they're going to read too much into what I'm doing, so I might as well play a little more off the seat of my pants kind of thing. And then, like you said, if I'm in no-limit hold'em with them, they don't want to play big pots because they don't want to lose a lot of their chips when they need those chips to play the better players in the other events.
Right.
So, yeah, I would push that and try to double up and then skate my way through the games I'm not really good at and then get back in the home and hold them and just shove on. When they want to play small ball with me, I'm like, screw you, Dan DeGron, on your small ball. You're gonna play for all your chips with that 10-10 that you say are just 10s. You know, so, yeah, I like the Players' Championship for that reason. And in fact, that, you know, I just want to make as much money as possible if I end up having to cash somehow.
Well, it's certainly, I would argue, the most prestigious tournament there.
Sure.
So there is an argument for that. And that was my number four. So
yeah, that's what I figured.
It would have been on my list. But and actually, I thought about it long and hard, but booted it off. So my last one is the $10,000 Heads Up Championship. So I mentioned I went to win a bracelet. So that's my Raz strategy. I want to have fun, which is my dealer's choice strategy.
Right.
But if I have this opportunity, I got to play one of the championship events, one of the big money events, right?
Right.
To me, at this point, it was between your 50K Players Championship, and I don't really want to play against you. So, so to me, I think, one, I really enjoy Heads Up. It's a tournament format that you don't find very often anywhere. Fortunately, we get to play at the Thunder Valley every year for our World Championship.
Right.
And I really enjoy that. So there's some rarity to it that I like. I also think that anything can happen heads up. I think if I'm playing against players that are better than me, I think it's easier to beat them heads up than it is as part of a nine-handed table. I could be wrong in that, but you know, if I'm at a nine-handed table and I'm against eight great players, I got to beat all eight of them, right?
Yeah.
Or at least a couple of them. I mean, I got to play against all of them at some point, right?
Right.
Three to the flop, there are two world-class players and me, right?
Right.
And heads up, two players to the flop, it's me and this awesome guy, right?
Right.
So there is kind of an equalizer there. Now, I'm not trying to minimize the skills and heads up. It's a very difficult format. But I think there's a chance for players like you or me to go farther there than even in like the 50K Players Championship kind of thing. And then the other thing, too, is I got to be honest about myself as a player. I don't play a lot of long events, right? I'm not playing events that have hour, 2 hour levels.
Right.
I really don't know how I would react in the main event. 2 hour levels for a week, 2 weeks, if you go really far, I think that might just drain me.
Yeah.
Where I think the heads up, it's certainly not going to go that long. And then you're going to have breaks. You know, you finish your heads up match, you might have a time to go pee, get a $12 Coke from the cafe.
You love bringing that up.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to keep bringing it up until it's not $12.
I know.
Which will be never. So I think from a stamina standpoint, that's the championship event that I could do the best in stamina-wise.
Okay.
I would get a break from time to time. Maybe.
All right.
Kind of my thinking.
I understand it. The only thing that I would say differently than that, and the show's getting pretty long, but was just that there's nowhere to hide. You know, like, no, when you got these other guys, you can pick out the guys that you can pick on and who you want to face and who you don't.
Wait, your good hands.
Yeah. And in this hand, no matter what, every single hand, you're getting barraged by these guys, and these guys are paying $10K to play, so they're clearly better than we are. And, yeah, there's nowhere to hide, but I see what you're saying. And like I said, why not? The guy's putting up the money for you. Why not answer
the 10K?
But
then again, that's all the more. That's another reason. That's a challenge, right?
Yeah.
Which is another factor that could come into people's, you know, hey, I want to be challenged. I mean, that's why you're playing the Players' Championship. You want to be challenged, right? You want to play against the best players. So, you know, if I'm staring across the table at Daniel Negreanu, that's going to be a good story, too, right?
Right, yeah. $10,000 for that story. Good luck.
And if I beat him, that's going to be even a better story, right?
All right, my last one was the fact that not just because it was a $111,000 entry and I can win a ton of money, but I thought it's for charity. So what's something good to come out of it? Because I know I'm not cashing any of these events. But if I were to cash, then I could give money to charity, plus my entry fee is giving money to charity.
Right.
So I thought, why not give back with this at least and not make it a total selfish thing? So, hey, 111K entry fee, you know, if I cash in that, I'm making some boku bucks, and then I'm going to give some to charity, and the charity's going to get some of my entry anyway. Right. So that's
so you're coming by the high roller for one drop.
Yeah, the high roller for one drop.
It's not the $1 million buy-in, obviously, if there was that, we probably would have excluded that from the list.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that would have been a no-brainer, too.
Right.
But yeah, so this year is the mini one, only 111,000.
Yeah, that's it.
but no, it's definitely an interesting event, and there's lots of reasons to play it. And I would imagine that would show up on lots of players' lists.
Yeah, absolutely.
For all those reasons.
For all those reasons. And plus, that's going to be the best players in the world, too. And you're going to meet some interesting people, too. The rich people who can afford it and hedge fund people and say, hey.
Yeah, and that's also a tournament that's going to get a little bit more attention than these other ones that we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even the Players' Championship is probably going to. The one event that can get the most attention outside the main event this year is probably going to be the high roller.
Absolutely.
All right, well, I'd like to see everybody go and make their own list at PokerRadius.com. Let's get this thing...
conversation going.
Going, because I think this is really interesting. I had a lot of fun talking about it, so
I'd
like to see what other people's thoughts and ideas would be. So
go to
PokerRadius.com and post your list there and let us talk about it.
All right. Any updates? Our most popular dealer contest is back, and this year we've opened up nominations to anyone who wishes to nominate a dealer. If you're a dealer or no one worthy of recognition, go to antiupmagazine.com/MPD through May 23rd to complete the nomination application. Winning dealer gets an Antiup Poker Cruise package for two for our November 14th sailing out of Tampa, Florida, and the top five will get prize packages that include a pair of Blue Shark optics. Also, there's still time to book our April 18th Antiup Poker Cruise out of Port Canaveral, Florida. Not a lot of time. This is the April 1st show, so we should probably be talking about another cruise now, so we're going to. Let's start to get serious about joining us on the Alaskan cruise out of Seattle on August 26th. That one's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I'm a little beautiful. Worried about being cold there because I'm in Iceland right now.
Oh, jeez.
Which, you know, actually, you know, surprisingly, Iceland is warmer than Toledo was last week.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. And I know they say that Iceland
is
green.
Alaska can be warmer than that.
Iceland's green and Greenland's ice, right?
Because yes, that's what I've heard, yes.
And they named it that so that the people would invade it or something. That's what I heard.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, all right. So, also, to remind you that for every hour of cash games that you play on board, you'll get $5 off your next sailing. Get all the details on these cruises and our other sailings at antiupcruises.com. Each week, we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline, 206-424-6145, or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. Comes from Robbie. He says, on one of your past episodes, you mentioned poker trying to make a TV drama based around poker to help start a new poker boom.
Hey, it could have been a comedy too, Robbie.
That's true.
In fact, I think a comedy would work better, but go ahead.
That's true. Well, it says, what do you think about a poker reality show? In other words, Big Brother, Survivor, Amazing Race, where you get a group of poker characters together in a house trying to win crazy challenges. At the end of the series, the winner would get their main event paid. Just the different types of personalities we have in poker would make for interesting TV in that scenario.
All right, now I could be wrong, and I should have spent a little time researching this, but, you know, I'm in Iceland, so looking at whales and puffins and stuff. So.
Yeah.
Didn't somebody try to do this? Wasn't there, like, maybe it actually happened, or maybe they cast it and never got off the ground, but this seems like something I remember someone doing at some point.
There
it wasn't
was
maybe a big network, but it was maybe a smaller network or something.
There were so many shows that they blur together, so it might feel like it's one great poker reality show when you're mad about all the. But there was this one about like from broke to 2 million or too broke to 2 million, where they had the young hot shot online guys living in this mansion in Vegas.
Okay, maybe that's what it was.
Trying to make enough money, but it was mostly just following their antics when they were blowing off steam. After
which,
they had put in those wicked sessions.
You have to do it to hit the mainstream. That was the whole idea.
Yeah. So, but I don't know if this specific show that Robbie's pitching here actually came about. I don't remember that. I do that. They all lived in a house, and they did it like a lot of the poker pros do. They go out in the Summerlin, like you said earlier. And,
right, yeah.
But I think in this case they, you know, they were still they had the online hooked up back then when the online was still, you know, around, and they were trying to just grind out a bunch of money trying to get to that $2 million plateau or whatever. And when they were screwing up, whatever, they would go outside and try to, you know, blow off steam by playing paintball or basketball or doing these crazy things, or going to get a bite to eat and picking up girls or something. I don't know what it was, but there was a bunch of stuff. I can't remember. It was something like Too Broke to 2 million or something like that. That was a while ago.
That's a good name. That's what it was.
But. Yeah. And anyway, I don't remember anything like this happening. That sounds like an interesting show. But you know what else? It always seems like chicken and egg stuff. It's like if the poker was already big, that's the type of show that people would watch.
Right.
But that's not the type of show that people would watch to make poker big. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's the case or not. But it sounds like a fun. I mean, I would watch it because, you know, we're poker people and we like reality shows.
I think what Robbie's talking about, it's kind of making me think of, I don't know if you ever watched Last Comic Standing on NBC. Nowadays, it's just straight stand-up.
Right.
But back when they first did it, the players that moved on actually moved into a house in California somewhere, and you saw them like living there, writing their jokes, and you know, they made fun of each other, they got angry at each other, like you do when you
eight people in a house, somebody, right?
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then, but it always ended at the end of the show with them doing a stand-up act head to head, and one got knocked off. Right.
Right.
So for the that kind of works a little bit better because it's humor, and humor is universal, right? So, you know, if you don't even care about the personalities of the people, at least they're cracking jokes all 42 minutes, right?
Right.
Where poker, I think, you still got to ask a little bit more of the viewer, I think. So, but I think for Robbie's idea to work, I think that a lot of that 42 minutes needs to not be poker. I think it needs to be just personalities hanging out and talking about music, or, you know, getting into fights or whatever it is. But enough poker that it would work. But then how do you do that, though? I mean, so here's the thing. In the Last Comic Standing, everybody did like a 3-minute stand-up bit at the end, right? So it's like 6 minutes. How are you going to – I would think every episode of this would end with a single table sit and go.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the first player that gets knocked out. Is out. You know?
Yeah, and you could like alter their chip stacks by how they perform during the week. So some guys start with more
but,
chips.
I mean, how
and stuff.
Are you going to show that in that? Because that's going to be an entire episode of them just playing poker, right?
Well, they would do it when they edited ESPN versions, where it's like everybody's all in every hand, but you get to see who did well. And
all right, so maybe you're showing three hands or something at the end. So then now the poker people are going to be upset, right?
If it's really successful, they'll do like The Bachelor, and they'll have a 2-hour show every week instead of one.
Ah, there you go. Yeah,
so the first hour is the hijinks.
But again, if you do that, though, then you're going to lose all the mainstream people the second hour, right?
Yeah, I know. It's tough. It's tough.
It's like, hey, wait a minute. I want to see him, you know, sticking his finger in
the light socket.
Right, exactly. Now they're just sitting raising and stuff. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. Good idea, Robbie. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Antiup Group discussions. It comes from Dave Beeson. We're in a 4-8 Omaha 8 game with a half kill.
Excellent. Can I play?
And the kill is on. The undergun player didn't act immediately, and the next four players fold, and the cutoff and button both call before the undergun player says, wait, I wanted to raise.
Yeah, sure he did.
Yeah. The floor ruled the calls would stay, and the undergun player may call the kill, but is not allowed to raise. Was this the right decision?
Elliot says, this was not the right decision. This hand should have been declared dead and sent to the muck. Six players acted before the undergun player spoke up to attempt to protect this hand. This is way too late. If he had spoken up within two players of him being passed over and the deal and the other players refused to pay attention or hold up, then being allowed to act on his hand would be acceptable. Also, if a player is allowed to act on a hand, how can it be determined that he only acted in a certain way, for example, calling versus raising? The player is either allowed to act or not allowed to act when betting amounts and raise caps are not a factor.
You agree with this?
I agree that it was not the right decision. My understanding, I might have to follow up with Elliot on this, though, would be that the under-the-gun player forfeited his hand here. I wouldn't see why we need to kill the entire hand.
Yeah.
Because this one guy wasn't paying attention.
Right. Because this guy could just do that all day long. Oh, I'm just gonna, I don't like these cards. I'm going to wait till it gets to player six and then say I wanted to raise with it. And then you get a whole brand new hand for free.
That's true. You get a new hand, right?
Yeah. So you have to just kill his hand or let him just call.
I think that's the case. What my understanding has always been that it's your responsibility to protect your hand, and that means not just hold on to your cards, but to protect your action.
Yeah.
And understand that it's your turn, and obviously, you know, the guy next to you, you know, you're looking at your cards, and he acts, and then the next four people, like a sprinkler, or folding, you know, there is a discussion to be had about whether how much time you have to actually protect your action. But in this case, it's ridiculous. I mean, how many players handed four? Yeah, and there's callers, so not even folders. So
yeah.
Call. I mean, it takes a little bit more time than the fold, right? So this guy clearly wasn't paying attention. It's unfortunate the dealer wasn't paying attention either. But again, it's a player's responsibility to protect his action. And, you know, too bad, so sad. Here, I think. But no, I would not say that he gets the option to stay in the hand. And I would not say that the hand should be killed.
Yeah, why wouldn't everybody else get penalized? Because this guy was an ass pickle.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that like every segment now.
Funny thing is I've used that a long time. I haven't brought it up on the show, but I've used it on Facebook and stuff. But I used it the other day, and people hadn't heard it before, and they love it too. So I don't know why. I don't know why it just doesn't.
The real question is, what color is the pickle? All right, we get to complete an O'Malley's move today. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in a $50 buy-in, single-table, no-limit hold'em sit-and-go, with starting stacks of 5,000. We frequent this sit-and-go and know many of the players in the game. Most of them are solid, with a few exceptions. We started with 8 players and are now down to 6. The top 2 get paid. We are in level 3, blinds are 75-150, and we sit with 6,000, third in chips. The blinds post, and the under-the-gun makes the table standard raise to 450. This player is probably the best player at the table. He reads the opponents well, understands the game, and has the most experience in sit-and-goes. He sits with 8,000 and is second in chips. The plus one folds, and it's to us in the cutoff with the queen of spades, queen of diamonds. No mystery here, we're going to pop it. I don't want to get tricky against this player, yet. We make it 1,300 to go. It's folded back around to the under the gun, who thinks for a brief moment before raising us to 3,000. So it's back to us. Why didn't he just shove here? Could he be making a move with an inferior hand? What's the move?
I don't like the situation. The third raise usually indicates kings or aces. And especially for when it comes from under the gun. If we call and win, we will likely take over the chip lead. But I don't think that means much to me now with 4 players to go before the bubble burst. I mean, obviously, you always win the chip leader, but I don't think it's worth taking unnecessary risk at this point to get to that point. But if we call and lose, we're out, and that sucks, right?
Yeah.
It's only level 3, and if we fold, we're almost right back to where we started the tournament with and still have plenty of play, actually lots of play here. I'm folding.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm going to fold here, but I am. It's tough to think to yourself you're going to fold queens and some sit and go. And you're down to 6, but you're right. At best, in this situation, under the gun player doing this, and he's got us out chipped. Now he could have a weaker hand because you know whatever.
Jacks, right? It's
right.
Possible.
But at best, we're probably in a race, and at worst, we're dominated. So I really, yeah, I think I'm gonna fold too. I normally I'm just like it's a sit and go. I'm playing this hand. I might call and then see what he does because I have position on him. Maybe float him a couple of hands, a couple of cards, but whatever.
Sure. This is the one point of the show where I kind of wish we did this show live with a live studio audience.
Yeah.
Burbank City, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or Studio City, California. Because I'd like to hear the reactions going on right now. Right?
They're all going, boo!
No, I don't think they all are, but I think there are a fair amount are. And I'm going to say the fair amount that are booing right now probably have not had their queens cracked by aces or kings in this exact same situation.
Yeah, right.
I think the first time that happens to you, you never, ever forget it. And I still remember. I remember when we used to go back to play in Ocala right after we started the magazine?
Yeah.
And one of our super fans, Barb, played up there. And I was in a tournament with her on one of our trips up there. And this almost exact same situation. I had queens, I raised, she re-raised, and I called the shove, and no surprise, aces. She had aces or kings, one of the two, and knocked me out of the tournament. Long drive home back to Tampa.
Yep.
Now, it doesn't mean it's always going to happen that way, but I have never forgotten that. I can tell you that exact. I know where I was sitting at the table where she was. Really, it's painful because you get. That's when you realize you get married to this good but not great hand, and all the stuff around you is telling you get out.
Yeah.
And you can't because it's like it's Queens.
You got married when you should have had a prenup and called off the wedding. Okay, here we go. Let's see what happens.
Hello again. It's hard to fold queens pre-flop in many cases. It's very hard to fold them six-handed, but let's look at the evidence. One, this player raised from under the gun at a very solid, tight game, then re-raised a player who has a solid, tight, aggressive image. Two, this player does not just play hands on a whim. He definitely has us on a range and either figures that A, he is ahead of our range, or B, can get us to fold a lot of our range. Three, this player bet half our stack. Perhaps it could be that he lost track of what we had, but I don't think so. Not this guy. He's sending us a message. If we want to see this hand through to the end, it's going to cost us what we have in front of us. We hear a familiar question uttered in poker. Why so much? But very rarely do we hear the question, why so little? I think the latter is the key to this one. Why isn't he just shoving here to make us make a decision? These are the questions rattling around in our brain until it hits us. He's setting a trap. He wants us to make the move so he can snap call and flip over his aces or kings. We aren't going to fall into this one. Even though we're only six-handed, we've only committed 1,300 and still have over 30 big blinds. I'm afraid of the monster under the bed. We fold, face up. Our opponent smiles and said, I normally wouldn't do this, but you have to know. Good fold. He flips over kings. We breathe a sigh of relief. Unfortunately, we still go out in fifth place when we get it all in with ace-king and lose to a flopped set of queens. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes you gotta lay down the monster. I hope to see you on the felt.
See? Totally knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to say spot-on analysis from O'Malley here, particularly the odd amount of the re-raise, which was something I didn't talk about, but it did pique some interest in me as well, too. But I think he sized up the situation right, and it's not easy to lay down queens, right?
Right. So,
but he definitely was correct to do so here, whether he was up against kings or not, but it certainly made it better.
Everyone made the best move. How can that be? We all made the best move.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. Somebody has to usually mess up somewhere.
Yeah. He had to re-raise, right? So I guess he made the right move.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you can call and...
He would have liked to get us to the flop, right?
Yeah.
That's being dominated.
I think you have to re-raise.
But I don't know how he does that without really risking a problem.
Yeah. You just call with the kings and an ace comes on a flop, you're screwed.
Yep,
you know, then you're second guessing. So he made the right move, too. So I think we all made the right move.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at aniamagazine.com. And this one comes from Paul. He's one of our friends that does a lot of traveling down to South Africa, Chris.
Nice.
Which is really interesting because I have a friend that just is flying back from South Africa today. She had a great time down there.
Wow.
And I really want to get down there sometime.
Safari.
One of my Africa is number one on my bucket list, by the way.
Cool.
Not necessarily South Africa, but if I'm over in Africa, I would go down and see South Africa.
Right.
All right. So he says, I finally got a hand that felt kind of interesting and fun. He says he's playing cash at a bombing out of the tournament at his informal poker club. It's quite a stable cash table, good players, a couple of maniacs, a couple of very strong, semi-aggressive types, but a solid table. I am neither fish nor rock at this table, mostly an old fella just trying to get a nut. No, I'm sorry. An old fella trying to learn how to play like a wizard.
Killing me.
Substantially up on my 2K buy-in, up to about 6K at this point. Good day at the office.
Jeez.
So he's made his 1K tournament money back and some profit. He said, I'm probably the most profitable player at the table in one of the larger stacks. Second cash table just broke down, and three players joined us. I know them all and have played them all. My two opponents have just sat down. They both have about 2 to 3K in front of them, so we have them crushed in chips, right?
Right.
Boris, excellent name. I so want to know a Boris.
Boris, B-O-R-I-S?
Yeah, B-O-R-I-S, like okay. Boris Becker.
But. Yeah, I know. I make sure it wasn't like Scott Boris, B-O-R-A-S.
Yeah. No, I don't want to be him. Yeah.
Okay.
Boris is a maniac. Actually, he says manic.
Uh-huh.
But no, I'm going to assume he's a maniac, right? Capable of playing any two cards. Lots of gamble. But savvy and knows who at the table to take seriously. He says, I'm on his avoid list, and he is on mine. Brad is a young wizard. I wonder if we're actually playing Hogwarts here.
This is hilarious.
Probably not top-notch, but he likes to play and take control pods. Very much the young, aggressive math player. All right?
Okay.
Playing 5-10, and Brad is in the small blind. There's a live straddle to $25. Oh, boy. And we are in middle position, and look down at 8-8. And he does not say there's any action before, so let's assume we are going to be the first one to actually enter this pot.
Interesting. I don't know how the straddle plays, so this is very... It's hard to come into these hands cold like this. It's one thing to hear all the description of players and stuff, but the live straddle, I mean, how does he play his straddle, you know? So, I still think that I would probably call with the eights. I would call the 25 and see what he does. If he doesn't do anything with it, that's fine. We're definitely ahead. If he does something with it, I think we're still ahead. Now they can redo something, you know? I feel like I'm just going to call.
Yeah, I think the 25 is meaningless to me here, I think. It sounds like it's always... It sounds like this game is mostly a 5-10-25 game, right?
So, yeah.
And with the 8s, I'm always going to set mine with them. And, you know, $25 is a fraction of what we have. And we can stack someone, so I don't...
And it's one of those places where you turn in your tournament chips and get money, but you get, like, a fraction of your money, right? You don't really have $6,000 here.
I have no idea. Why would you say that?
Isn't it? I thought a lot of those places, the way they go, you play it like a tournament, but at the end, it's a there's like a formula.
Oh, it's just an informal poker club. So yeah. I'm just assuming it's a normal cash game, but could be wrong. I don't know.
I didn't know the guys are sitting down at 6K playing 5-10.
Well, that's a good point too. Well,
I thought it was a tournament room.
But his buy-in was 2K, so.
That's what I mean. I don't know if he's buying it for 2,000 or if he gives him 200 and gets 2,000 chips. You know, a lot of those places, like there's places like that, what, in Minnesota or something, where you play tournaments. But so I don't know if this is a legitimate $6,000.
I'm going to assume that it's everything he's telling me is exactly what it is.
Okay, so if it's legitimately $6,000, then
but it doesn't matter because neither one of us are playing in a game with $6,000 in front of us, right?
Right. No, I know, but I'm thinking mindset. You know, is it $25 he's calling, or is he calling $250?
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I'm still going to just call. I'm just going to call.
And it's probably not dollars over there. It's either South Africans.
Right. That's true.
Rubles or something, right?
Right.
Something like that.
I don't know what they have.
All right. He says, I know this is an action table, so I limp for the 25, expecting a raise and wanting to see what price is set before I actually commit real money to the pot. Says, I expect a raise. I know I will call most reasonable raises, set mining. Hi-ho, hi-ho.
Okay.
I don't know if that works out, but funny nonetheless. As usual at this table, there are three more limpers, including Boris on the button. Brad then raises to 150.
Yeah. This is tough now because it's not the straddle who raised to 150, right? It's another player who's saying, you know what, I want to thin this field.
Yeah, I don't know. Brad is in the small blind. Yeah, that's right. I don't know who the straddle was.
So that tells you more, too. He's in the small blind, which means he knows he's going to be out of position the rest of the hand, and yet he's still going to put in 150. He's got to have eights beat. You know, he may have ace-king, but then now what are you going to do when everything comes overs to eights? I'm probably going to get out of this. It'd be one thing if it went around to the straddler who then raised, but I'm probably going to get away
so
from this.
So you're worried
now
about yet another raise coming here, right?
Yeah, because, first of all, it'd be one thing if, first of all, he said a reasonable raise. Now it's 150. If we're playing legitimate money here, and that's, is 8-8 worth 150 in this game when you got a wizard making the raise?
Well, I don't know whether you actually make this parallel from tournaments to cash games, but, you know, one of the things I learned from Lee, and I don't think it's Lee came up with it, I think it's kind of standard, is, you know, you don't want to call more than 10% of your stack, right?
Right.
So our 10% of our stack would be 600.
Right.
So I think we're still within set mining potential here at 150. Now, you're right, if it ends up there's going to be another raise at some point, that's going to get us really close to that 600, and I don't know if I want to wait for 600 on this hand. But I'm comfortable with the 150 for a set mine. Again, I don't play this game a lot, but I
right.
think, you know.
Yeah, I guess if it's, like you said,
if
it
you
is...
ratio it down to what we normally play, I think this is still something we would call in a game that we would play. So,
So if it was 15...
Like a fifth, so it would be like 30. It would be like a $30 raise in a 1-2 game.
Yeah.
The raise to 30, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing, too, is the straddle you got to worry about now.
And right, so, that's true. Yeah, exactly. So I would say in a 1-2 game, $30 is an easy call for me. But if I am concerned that it's going to become 100, then I got to be careful.
Right.
So
in this case, 600.
Right. So here I think the 150, it's just big because we don't normally play that big a game, but...
It just would help if I knew more about the straddle's personality or playing style, you know, to know if he's going to be like, going to go hide in a corner somewhere after this 150 raise, or if he's going to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to make it 550.
Well, the other thing too is I'm wondering where the straddle is here, right?
Yeah.
Because we were in middle position and there wasn't any action before us, so if it's under the gun, I guess, yeah, he could act last, right?
Yeah, he would act last.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. All right.
So... I'm a little cautious calling here just because of the fact that Straddle's still alive.
If that's the case, we'd have our answer before he gets back to us.
Right, because Straddle would come up. Right. All right, so then what happens then?
All right, so he says, I'm pretty sure he's doing this with a pretty wide range, seeking to punish the limpers. I do figure him to have a hand of some sort. Best estimate, some kind of ace. So I decided to immediately put him to the test. So I guess this...
See, I don't have my answer.
Maybe the Straddle was on the button.
Or he folded.
Yeah.
No, because if the straddle was on the button, the small blind would have already acted. You said this guy's true. In the small blind.
Yeah,
so remember. We're assuming the straddle folded.
Right.
If the straddle folded, I would probably...
Anyhow, so he bets 150. We're next to act now. So what was
I would,
just
I would call.
Right.
If I'm next to act, I'm calling. Because okay. The straddler got out of the way, probably. And I'm calling because it's set mining still worth it for the amount of money we have in front of us. It's just a regular re-raise, and I'm going to call it. So.
Okay. So here's this, I decided to immediately put him to test. I figured I could take this down with a limp raise at worst. I thin the field of me and Brad, and I will have position for the balance of the hand, so I raised to 350.
I don't necessarily hate that move if I believe that read. So.
It's not what I would do, but I could see a lot of reasons to do that.
I would do it if the straddle, definitely if the straddle did that. If the straddle made the raise, not...
Right,
Brad, I would definitely do that. Consider
the problem
it at least.
Is it's a small blind, right?
Yeah.
And I get what he's saying. He's trying to punish the limpers, but that's a bad spot to be punishing limpers.
Yeah.
Button's a great place to punish limpers.
Yeah.
Small blind, not so much.
Yeah. But like I said, I don't. If he's got the read on spot on, I don't necessarily disagree with that. Clearly, he doesn't because the hand continues. So, I'm just gonna call. He raised, but I'm gonna call.
All right. He says, given his 150 bet, it's a deliberately small raise, enough to chase out speculative limpers, but enough to force me to play for stacks if there is a re-raise. Oh, but not enough to force me to play for stacks.
Right.
If it's a re-raise.
Right.
Boris on the button calls, as does Brad. He says, wow. Boris is now the wild card now, because I figure I'm probably facing an ace from Brad, and figure my 8-8 is good pre-flop. I mean, obviously, he's playing his reads on these players, right? So I think without us knowing anything about these players, I think Brad has a stronger hand than that. But
it's tough. And the other thing, too, is just now you're going to the flop three-handed.
I do think we're better off than Boris, though, right?
You're going to the flop three-handed. So even if you do have the best hand, then you're probably up against four overs.
You're probably not going to on the flop, right?
Yeah, you're four overs in the flop. You're going to have to hit your set now or represent something massive. And
yeah. But again, that's what we're doing, right? Although we raised here, so it's a little different.
Yeah.
Changed it. All right. He says, frankly, Boris could have a blockbuster loyalty card and a business card in his hand. He has chips, the button, and gamble enough for the Gambinos. Gotta love Boris.
Well, you know, he's the maniac, so. Yep. There's like, 1,000 in the pot now?
Well, three of them at 350, so
yeah.
More than 1,000. Plus the limpers that we had. So. Hey.
You could be looking at stacks by the turn.
Yeah. Flop is a king 10-6 rainbow. Our hero says, I'm not thrilled, but Brad checks.
Man. So we're really going to want to bet 650 here, or are we going to check behind?
Problem is, we have no idea what's Brad. He has a read on Brad that Brad is weak, right?
Yeah.
I don't have that read right now. So now it seems to me that this is a check raise spot for Brad. Check and make continuation bet and then spring into action.
Or Boris is the maniac. We don't know what he has.
That's true, too.
Any two cards and it's two overs to our eights already. Oof.
The problem, though, is we check here. Now we're down to just two outer, right? Because there's not going to be another card that's going to come and help us here. I mean, there's a backdoor straight for us.
Right, a 7 or a 9 give us backdoor straight, but...
But really, we're going to have to hit one of our two cards to win this hand now. And we put a lot of money in for hoping for a two-outer now.
Yeah.
So I almost feel like we had to bet because of that, but that's a bad spot to be in. But then again, I wouldn't have raised
to 350 preflop.
350. So, so we're on different trains here.
Yeah.
On our tracks.
Well, we took control of the hand. We got a bet, like representing it. I mean, you and I are a different mindset, so we're going into it thinking we limped, but he actually raised. So I have to play the way he is now. I'm in his shoes. If I raised now, I have to represent that king. And they checked
and
to
if
us.
If he's right that Boris is kind of weak, the small blind, but you have to bet here, and he could probably get him out. You know, if he was just literally trying to
punish
the limpers, he's not going to be able to stand up here. But then the problem, obviously, as he said, is that, you know, Boris could be around all day long here.
Well, the other thing about Brad, though, is if he was trying to punish the limpers, then he wouldn't have called our re-raise.
That's a very good point, actually.
So I'm still wary of both these players and four cards to my two with two overs. I'm a little worried about it, but I took control of his hand the way he played it. I have to play it the way he played it. I'm going to play it. So 650, put it in.
All right. Let's see. We check. He says, again, I want to control the pot as much as I can. And Boris checks the button, which means his blockbuster loyalty card must have expired.
Wow.
He'd bet from the button if he had even a small anything, or if he believed my limp raise had whiffed, which is more likely. I'm also going to say, is blockbuster still popular in South Africa?
No, it's worthless. That's what he's trying to say.
No, but he had it before his blockbuster loyalty card. He didn't. He always says it's expired now because he checked.
Oh, so he thinks it's still.
But regardless, Boris is still carrying this around in his wallet, so there must be a reason, right? I haven't seen a blockbuster here since color was invented.
Yeah, it's just worthless, I think.
All right, so the turn is a 7. Board is still a rainbow, so king, 10, 6, 7. So we do pick up that back door draw.
And it's another undercard to us, so if they whiff both, we're in real good shape here.
And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, Brad very quickly bets 400.
I'd call instantly.
So you think now he's trying to steal because we showed weakness, right?
Yeah, I would have bet 650 on that, me. So since he didn't bet, now he's saved 250, and it's got a further card of information.
Plus we got picked up some more outs.
Yeah, we picked up outs, too. Right, so yeah. Any 8 or 9 is probably going to give us a win. So if we were behind, I'm going to call that 4. It's worth it.
Yeah, I think
provided
so.
Boris doesn't go crazy on us.
All right, he says, I think a little bit. See that Boris is looking like he's done with a hand and elect to call. So
yeah, okay, good.
We give Boris the once over, and that made it easier.
Good.
As expected, Boris folds, and we are down to 2.
Cool.
Because I don't believe Brad has a king. So he could have a 10, so I'm putting him on ace-10, ace-jack, ace-queen at this point, and I'm willing to spend a little bit of my accumulated wealth to see what he does on the river. The river comes another 10. So final board, king, 10, 6, 7, 10. And Brad very quickly, almost not seeming to consider the river, bets 700. The pot is 1900-ish at this point.
Hmm. Well, if you put him on a 10, you're losing no matter what anyways. It doesn't matter if another 10 comes.
Exactly.
The another 10 helps us if we say, hey, we probably got our read wrong, and another 10 is less likely means he has one in his hand, maybe. And there's some statistics that say that's probably a bad way of thinking, but... I'm going to call. It's fun to call.
Really? Well, it's always fun to call. You're playing with Paul's money.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's 6,000, you know. He's only going to lose 1,000 on this hand if he's wrong.
I don't know what we're beating. We have a bluff catcher is the best we have here, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, you know, I guess maybe he could have like A6 or A7.
Well, why didn't he bet the turn?
Yeah, exactly. So... I don't know. I don't have a good feeling about this.
All right, I'm going to call. You're going to fold.
I think. I just don't have a good feeling. I don't know. I mean, those are two ballsy bets by Brad if he has nothing.
He's a wizard.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so our hero says, I spend more time thinking about this than Brad did. I don't put him on a king. I think he c-bets that every day of the week, twice on Sundays. And the second 10 makes, in my mind, the ace 10 far less likely. I mean, sure, he could have it, but I'm not convinced. I figure he's far more aggressive with almost any pocket pair that has me beat, and I'm now almost certain he has missed and is betting as his only option to win the hand. His story does not make sense. However, he has 1,000 behind, and I want to give him the chance to jam if I'm wrong, or if he grows wild hair off his ass at this last moment. So I flat call the 700.
Yeah, because he didn't bet the flop.
Yeah, which, I guess that's a good point that he's trying to...
He bet the turn trying to steal it, and then he bet the river trying to steal it. I don't know.
A lot of stealing attempts.
That's a lot of stealing. Because he knows... Well, he thought, because we didn't bet the flop, he thought, okay, I'm going to steal on the turn, but he didn't bet enough. Got rid of one guy. Then when it got to the river, he's like, well, I can't win now.
Right.
No, I got to bet because I can't win with my whatever it is I have.
Yeah, that don't make sense, but that's really difficult for him.
Yeah.
I think difficult for us to really put him on that narrow of a...
Well, he's really good at Quidditch, so, I mean, he might be really good at this. You know, he catches the snitch all the time, so...
All right, so we flat call the 700, and our opponent announces you are good and folds unseen.
Nice.
He says, I'm not that guy, so I don't insist on seeing the call and bet. Table my 8-8, even though I don't have to. I figure it won't hurt to let people know I have at least some game and scoop the pot, so...
Nice.
Kind of similar to last week's hand of the week, right?
Yeah, it could have just been a broken draw like Queen Jack.
He does say, afterwards, the dealer told me he would have called Brad with deuce-deuce, listing a dozen physical tells and indicators to say he figured Brad had missed, but I was thinking very simply this. I don't think he has the king. The second 10 means I am now sure he does not have that either, and I figure my third pair on the board is probably the nuts. I was quite pleased with myself for making what felt like a relatively big call, not heroic on the Spartan scale, but also not an Italian tank. One forward gear, five reverse.
I think Paul wants to be a writer.
No, I always enjoy his emails.
Yeah, it's very good.
Interesting. He actually has a blog, too, paulralston.com. So maybe nice. It's very interesting.
Yeah. A little free plug
free
there.
Free advertising.
There you go. So he gets a little time on the show and a little plug.
And I will say this is my big weakness in Hold'em is making these big river calls when I have a weak hand.
Yeah. That's why we listen to the story we're being told.
Yeah.
Story I'm telling is a good show. I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.